Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome back, everybody. This is episode 5 of my podcast, The Turnaround. I'm your host, Kimberly Bomani, and today we'll address the Golden State Warriors advancing to the NBA Finals for the third consecutive year, and the fact that all year Golden State had on their mind was redemption. Ever since they became the first team in NBA history to blow a 3-1 lead in the NBA Finals, they restocked their own roster looking for blood. Adding Kevin Durant was part of the equation, but their team play and overall decisiveness and efficiency from the start of the season to the finish has put them in place to achieve history. 12-0 through three rounds, the most talented Western Conference, and now they're currently 4 games away from getting their second title in 3 years. When you look at sports, sometimes it can just amount to the year of occurring repetitiveness, and during 2017, this sports spectrum has equaled out to be the year of redemption. In college basketball, North Carolina University's basketball team saw their heart broken at the buzzer versus Villanova in the 2016 National Championship. The next year, they redeemed themselves with a victory at the same stage, with an individual desire to get back at the hurdle that impeded their dream. Clemson fell to the mighty power of Alabama in the 2016 College Football Playoff National Championship, only to recover the following year of 2017 with their same core pieces that got them there before to extract revenge. So now, maybe the cards are just aligned in 2017 for Golden State to do the same on the professional level and redeem a championship they had in their grasp, only for it to fall away the previous year. I'm about to get to X's and O's are cool, and they're justified. But beside the fact that the Warriors have 4 All-Stars, their overall hunger as a team has admitted itself in leaps and bounds to a point where it's hard to see anyone stopping them from their ultimate goal, no matter how hard people try. And looking back at their playoff run, Golden State, they were just at another level. As always, for a championship team, any championship team in the history of sports, you do get lucky breaks, and their luckiest break of all might have been Kawhi Leonard for the San Antonio Spurs, the opposition that they went against, the opposition's best player. He went out in game 1 during an appearance where he single-handedly was the best player on the court. He was dominating on both sides of the basketball. But once he went out, it pretty much took the heart and soul of a San Antonio Spurs team. And from there, you could see the greatness is exuberant from Golden State on all levels, and they pretty much achieved what they set out to achieve from start to finish before the season started. And I think kudos to them because, listen, they're 4 All-Stars. They make up a pretty big majority of their team, but their overall team play and their overall depth from the first man to the last man is something that has been overlooked. It was overlooked heading into this season due to the fact that to get Durant, they had to let go a lot of key pieces off of their bench from last year. So the overall assumption from the basketball fans' point of view was that, okay, they gave up a lot to get a star, but what is behind the star-laden team that was there before? Is that second unit going to elevate their talent level? And Andre Iguodala has been hurt throughout this playoff run, but you can see the rise of Patrick McCaw, the young rookie from UNLV. You could see the rise and the betterment of Ian Clark at the 2 guard position. He's coming and knocking down 3-4 threes. You can see David West, a guy who, again, for the second year in a row, aimed at minimum wage as being his payment for the ultimate payment, which is the championship ring. And when he's been on the floor, he's been able to control the pace of the team from a power forward standpoint to where he's at the top of the key. He's giving out backdoor dishes. And when he's on the block, he's able to, when he gets his limited touches, when he gets him, he's deep in the paint. He's able to use the muscle. And he pretty much used the talent that's been within him all of his career to get the points that he needs to get. And from a team perspective, they weren't the biggest team coming in, and it was looked upon that size would slow them down. And yet you can see that throughout this whole playoff, they've been the number one rebounding team in the postseason. And you can credit that to Zaza Pachulia before he got hurt, his toughness down low. JaVale McGee has paid them huge dividends as a backup center, due to his energy, his athleticism, and his effort to protect the rim. And then you also got to throw the fact that David West has done a pretty good job withstanding, you know, holding his ground on the block due to his inner upper body strength. So, listen, Golden State, before the season started, I expected them to win. And a lot of it was due to the fact that Durant was there on the team. And before they had Durant, they were a complete team. Now, granted, when they got Durant, some of the pieces that helped make them into the complete team that they are today left them. But their philosophy and their agenda to be able to move the ball around and take great shots for the betterment of the team. That philosophy was always instilled within them. Even when Steve Kerr went out with his back problems as a coach, his staff is still the same message, and you just do what you do. They have a ton of players on the team. They're unselfish, and their push to the finals, their push to a championship reminds me a lot of when the San Antonio Spurs lost to the Miami Heat, another LeBron James-led team in the finals before Ray Allen had a lucky three-point shot. And that whole year, that whole summer, and that whole season, it was ingrained in the San Antonio Spurs' mind that they had to get back to the finals. And not only did they have to get back there, they had to play the same team that messed them around and ruined their chances of achieving greatness, and they had to redeem themselves. And it just seems like this is where it is going. Obviously, Golden State has been way more dominant than San Antonio ever was when they went out on their redemption tour the year after Miami won their second consecutive title. But the redemption tour is real. And obviously, I expect Cleveland to come out once they handle their business against Boston. But the Warriors are just playing at a high-octane level. Both teams have stars to the bench, all of that. But I think when you look at Golden State, they just have a better system, in my opinion, to be able to achieve what they need to achieve on the offensive and defensive side of the court. Offensively, ball movement. Defensively, team movement. And they're going to present a lot of pressure for anybody that comes out of the East. And their team, man, they're here to stay. I expect them to win this championship this year. I have came out on the road and said that next year you probably won't see the same two teams in the finals again. I don't think it'll happen a fourth year in a row. Whether it be Golden State gets a stiffer challenge from likes of San Antonio when they restock. Cleveland might get a stiffer challenge as well. Boston makes a couple moves, or Washington makes a few moves. This is the last good time we see these two teams battle each other yet again in the NBA Finals. And this, you can make a case that this is the most stacked that they've ever been during this run. And when they step out on the court, I expect it to be a dogfight. I expect it to be intense. And I expect nothing less from these two teams to get at it to be a long, hard 6 or 7-game series, and we'll see what happens from there. Moving on to the Boston and Cleveland series, as Game 4 resumes tonight. And as an individual, you just marvel at the greatness of LeBron James and what he's able to bring as a player since he was 18 years old. When he came out of high school, he was a supreme talent, had a lot of expectations plastered upon him. It was up to him to be able to achieve the levels that he was able to achieve in his career. He's done so, but I've made the case that as great as LeBron James is, he's been prone to fold at the most inopportune times in his career. And it was on display in a potential door-closing Game 3 versus Boston in the Eastern Conference Finals. Yet LeBron's greatness has led people to validate his complete no-show as a bad game that showcases his humanity on the court. Slightly, some have just made his performance as a fourth quarter thing. And are quick to point out Kevin Love and Kyrie Irving, too, went into a low scoring, not cracking 10 points as a combined duo in the lasting quarter in the point column. But I'm not here to be objective. I'm here to be real. And the realness is that Bron was a non-entity the whole game, not asserting himself at all aggressively through any of the quarters. And when the game got tight in the fourth, it was evident he clamped up and shied away from the moment, leaving his team, who had carried the burden the first three quarters, out to dry in the fourth, when they needed their superstar to come through and put the finishing touches on the basketball game. There's a strong assumption that Bron will still find his way in the finals for the 7th straight year. But his play when he gets there versus Golden State will need to be engaged at all times. Plays off against them where you're not feeling it against that unit will always put you behind the 8-ball to a point where you can't come back and fix it with your supreme talent alone. Then there is the fact that this series he's in right now isn't over. Boston, by taking Game 3, have put themselves in an extraordinary position to possibly even a series as they head out to Boston. Meaning their energy level tonight will be at an all-time high, just like Cleveland's will be, resulting in a tighter four quarters of basketball than people think in a do-or-die Game 4 for both franchises, in my honest opinion. Whether LeBron or the Cavs know it or not, Game 4 is their biggest game of the playoffs. From a momentum and longevity standpoint, they let Boston come into their building and steal yet another game. There's maximum pressure on Cleveland to rewrite this ship due to the fact that you'll have given a scrappy team more energy to keep clawing down your back. And whether people recognize it or not, Boston seems supremely confident as the game went on the offensive side without Isaiah Thomas. And when the ball moves, the Cavs have had a notorious tendency to fall asleep and give up the open trade.
And looking at, and I'm going to go back to the Boston-Cleveland series, discuss LeBron after I get this point in. This series, in my honest opinion, it's not over. I know when Game 3 happened, the way the game ended, a lot of Cleveland fans and a lot of LeBron supporters are just people looking at it in general who want a Cleveland-Golden State matchup in the finals, the rubber match that everybody's been talking about since Kevin Durant has joined the Warriors. Since that's what people want, since that is what people want, they're just brushing off Game 3 for the Cavs as, okay, LeBron didn't show up. It was an anomaly. Someone even rewrote history of the game saying LeBron just didn't show up in the fourth. But I saw that game from start to finish, and even when these guys were up by 20, you saw that LeBron, as I said before, he just wasn't engaged, and he wasn't within the game the whole game. Like, there was no quarter where he had the worst layoff. Now, the fourth quarter may stand out due to the fact that you saw when the moment got tight, he didn't want it at all. But I'm not going to just look at the fourth. I'm going to look at the whole complexity of the game. And looking at the totality of it all, he wasn't in it. And he had his six assists. He had his six rebounds, the six turnovers. And like I said, LeBron is not a scorer. But when you look at the box score, and your eyes zero in on the fact that this dude had more shots taken than points scored, you know he wasn't in. You know he wasn't in the game. I think part of it was lack of respect for Boston. And I also think part of it also, LeBron has ingrained in him throughout his career, great as a talent as he is, he's not a killer. And he's been prone to, in any game, it doesn't matter if his team's up, it doesn't matter if his team's down, it doesn't matter if he's at his highest peak or at his lowest peak, or just at a peak of normalness, and normalness to LeBron is just, okay, you bring up his name, we automatically come to an assumption that he's the best player in the league. In this context, LeBron didn't show up, and he's done this a lot in his career. I know a lot of people try to brush it under the rug, like, oh my goodness, he only did it six times. This is like a rarity. First time he's had a bad game in six seasons. No, there's been performances where, okay, the box score doesn't tell the whole story. I've seen it when the road gets tough, against Orlando, against Boston, against Golden State the first time, against Indiana, even the series they won against Indiana. If he feels like it's not happening, who said that? And this is the biggest, really, discrepancy that I have with LeBron in the future, because these guys will get by us Boston, but when they hit against Golden State, you got to be locked in all game. It doesn't matter if you reach the lowest of lows and you reach the highest of highs. You can't take your foot off the gas because this is a well-oiled machine that's not going anywhere. They don't take their foot off the gas when they're coming in, and they're sure not this year because they remember what happened last year in the finals. They're seeking blood. They're looking for redemption. You can't expect your star-studded player, who's the engine of that team, to be able to revert back to his common anomaly. And his common anomaly is once in every blue moon, he'll take a game off, and he'll take it at the most inopportune time. And the most opportune time is in the regular season. It's the playoff game that you need. And in my opinion, every playoff game that you play is a must-win. I know a lot of people place must-wins on certain games when the numerical standpoint proves that, okay, if this team loses this one, they'll have a farther chance in capturing wins to win the series than the other team. No, every game's a must-win. And for LeBron to come out and lay an egg, it's huge. He has a historical track record of doing this. You don't want him to revert back to those tendencies. And obviously, everybody expects him to bounce back game four. I expect him to bounce back game four. I know that won't be a problem, but in the future, and the future is the next round, if he has, in my opinion, one game like that against Golden State, it's going to wind up and come back to bite him. Because as the series fulfills itself and they might lose in six or seven, individuals will look back at a game or a turning point in the series, and you don't want to. And for LeBron's sake, he's been saying that he's chasing after the ghost. He's been chasing after Jordan. For his sake, he don't want people to refer back to, in a game against the Warriors, that one game that changed the series because your energy wasn't up. And that's the worst thing. You'd rather have a player just have a bad game. You live with that than an individual who didn't show up and provide any effort or tenacity. He's done it plenty of times in his career. He needs to be called out upon it. People pulled out of the annals of history. He had six games where he scored under 15 points. A lot of people brushed it to the side, saying, it don't matter. LeBron is one of those people. He's a cognizant individual when he's not going from the field, take a step back, yada, yada, yada. But I've also seen that he shuts down on both sides. And When you see him shut down on both sides as being a common occurrence throughout his career, you know what he's taking. He's shutting down. And he shut down on that game. I don't feel like he was really held accountable for it to a degree. He was given a pass because of his dominance 10 games prior, but I'm on him because I've seen it before occur in his career multiple times. Not one every 6 years like LeBron fans or individuals of the Cleveland Cavaliers who are trying to prompt a star, and I understand. Not like how they're trying to pay it. I've seen him do it against Indiana, and that was like 2 years ago. I've seen him do it against Boston. I've seen him do it against Orlando. I've seen him do it against Golden State Warriors. I just racked off about four teams that he's done it against. It's a common theme within this guy's career. And as a Cleveland fan, you just hope, if you're a Cleveland fan, you just hope that he doesn't revert back to those entities for the sake of the team. But flashing back to this series, like I said, man, it's not over. And I want to say it's not over because Boston had supreme confidence on the offensive side of basketball in that fourth quarter. Now, Marcus Smart took some terrible shots, but the thing that shined the brightest to me was their overall ball movement on the side of the basketball court on offense, and they made shots. And I expect them in game four. They were hesitant in the first three quarters, but once they got back in it, they, you know, had confidence, exuberated. Brad Stevens' X's and O's wise coaching got better. He started putting Jarepko in. He started calling even better plays as the game got tight. And I expect a game four. A lot of people saying Cleveland going to bring their A game. Boston's going to bring their A game, too, because as a team who was left for dead 2 games prior, it's a 2-1 series. And you know, okay, we're a win away from making this best of three. And if we make it best of three, we have a legitimate chance. And the biggest thing for Cleveland is this. When a game gets tight against this Boston team, they're in trouble. So it'll be behooved them, I think, to set a tone early. And when they set the tone, they have to stick with the tone and they can't let up. Because Boston shown in game three, and they've shown a lot throughout the season that when the game gets tight, Stevens is one of the greatest X's and O's guys out of timeouts. And you saw, I thought, in a lot of those plays late in the game, some of them, not all of them, were out of timeouts. But in late game situations, it seemed as if Boston just went back to the plays that they were accustomed to running in practice when behind closed doors, their coach calls out, all right, this is a late game situation. Under 10 seconds, we run this type of play where we give Horford a nice look down low, where the ball just swings. And Cleveland's defense really hasn't been that good all year. They've cleared up just enough. But you have seen in this series, and you saw some of it against Toronto, that when the ball moves, they struggle to get back on defense to contest the shot. It's one of their biggest weaknesses as a unit. And the ugly head of the snake kind of showed itself again late in the game against Boston. But ultimately, it came down for Boston. They had to make the shot. And Avery Bradley made some huge shots. Jarepko made some huge shots down the stretch. Horford made that huge shot on the block. They gained rebound as a team, even though Tristan Thompson was dominating in the fourth quarter. They got the rebounds that they needed to get. But also, listen, I think they didn't get a ton of rebounds that they weren't supposed to get. But it helps you when you're getting dominated on the glass to when you're on offense and you have a chance to get it, a quality look behind distance or on any avenue of the court. It helps your chance to alleviate the rebounding discrepancy by making a shot. And they made those shots when they counted. So, listen, it's going to be an intense game. And can't believe I'm saying this. I think Boston is going to win it. They're going to win it tonight. They're going to even the series. And I don't want to, and I think part of it is due to the fact that, listen, both teams are going to come with it. And I just think Boston got a new exuberance, a new belief in them to get it done as well. They're going to come with it on both sides. Cleveland's going to come with it on both sides. But I think what it's going to come down to, the game's going to get tight. And I just trust Stevens, even though he doesn't have the personnel that Tyronn Lue has. So when it gets tight, he's going to run a play that works. Those guys are going to get wide open shots. And listen, you are who you are. Late this year, Cleveland's defense hasn't been the greatest. And I know it's bettered itself than what it was prior, but they still did give up 111 points, though, against the Celtics. And they gave up 100 points plus against the Pacers as well. They've done this before, and even if they get past Boston, they're going to be facing an offensive juggernaut and going to say, well, it's going to move the ball way better than Boston does. And who has uncanny shooters way better than Boston does. And when they have a chance to get the ball through the hoop, they're going to do it because that's who they are from a talent perspective. final minute take for me, talking about Kevin Durant, his status as a player with the Golden State Warriors, and in an interview with Uninterrupted on ESPN, he commented that going to the Golden State Warriors was 100% the easiest decision he made in his career, and it was the right decision. And a lot of people had conversations about, did he make the right decision, yada, 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 all throughout the summer. A lot of people were calling it mainly through the mouthpiece of Stephen A. Smith, because he was the first person to admit it at that kind of aptitude and horrendousness, that it was the weakest move from a superstar and went to the team to beat him, even though in history a ton of players have went to rival teams or individuals that have beat them to achieve the common goal, which is ultimately to win. But the biggest thing is, the biggest thing for me is, how do people look at Durant's decision? And I think personally, it's your own opinion. You can look at it however you want. Everybody has their own agenda. Everybody has their own brain. But I will say this, though. If you look at it from a humanistic standpoint, when you look at it from a standpoint of a human being, not an athlete, and you realize that in life, you're going to have opportunities to be able to better yourself at all costs. And you're going to have an opportunity to do so at the expense of familiarity. And familiarity for Kevin Durant was, listen, I could stay with Oklahoma City. I've been with this unit, been with this franchise for the last 8 years of my career. They adore me like a son. I'm respected. I've elevated myself into a superstar here. I could stay here, try to fight for a ring. Or I could go to a franchise that I've seen play, I've played against, and it's unfamiliar territory. But it'll help enhance me as a human being and also enhance my basketball legacy. And I'm going to put it in the standpoint of this. As an individual, and from an individual standpoint, outside of basketball, just putting it from normal people's point of view, and it's, listen, you get a job that's an upgrade over the job you have now. And you see that it provides advancements economically, socially, and also internally for you to better yourself as a human being at a field that you love. You're going to take it. And at Durant's point, you see a brand of basketball that is better than what you're playing in now in Oklahoma City. You see players on that team that are unselfish to an extent to where it will allow your play to even flourish. And ultimately, you see a franchise, they know what it takes to win a championship because they've done it before. And ultimately, because you're a superstar, you're going to be valued at the end of your career by what you've been able to do in the biggest games and what you've been able to achieve at the biggest stages. And that means you got to get at least a ring to get into that conversation. And people can paint it how they want to about, oh, my goodness, Durant, snake, traitor. His ring that he's going to win this year is not going to be valued in the circles of legitimacy when we talk about all-time greats. It is. Because his players are going to evaluate him ultimately as an all-time great due to the fact that when he's in the finals and he's able to produce to help his team win, they're going to put him in the conversation of other players that have been able to produce in the finals and win. Because ultimately, what Kevin Durant's legacy matters to is not to the average reporter and not to the average fan. It matters to his average corporation, his average peer group, and that's the NBA. Because when other legends look at Durant, and as time moves on and as time wears on, they're just going to look at not only his statistics, not only his talent, not only his game, but the biggest thing. And the biggest thing is his ability to produce in the postseason to magnitudes where ultimately his team got over the hump and was able to achieve the biggest goal, and that's the Larry O'Brien Trophy. Because that's what it's all about. People are very hypocritical in this society. They say it's all about the ring. When a guy tries to go after the ring, he's being selfish. He's bandwagoning. He's doing this and he's doing that. But if you look at Golden State play this year, without Durant, you can make a strong case that they wouldn't be as successful as they are now, and that possibly at the finals level, the way Cleveland bettered themselves as well in the offseason, they wouldn't have a chance to beat Cleveland because Durant is able to alleviate a lot of pressure off of Steph Curry and Klay Thompson have to go out there and put up the point variety that they had to put out of the unit in the past because he's a guy that can get you 30. And he does it with extra, with so much ease, and he's an unselfish player as well. So when he attracts attention, he's able to feed to the other outlets on the team, and they have the ability to cash in. So I think when Durant made the decision, I applauded him because I applauded LeBron he made it. And it would seem like the ultimate hypocrite for me to say, all right, LeBron made the right decision when he went to Miami because he wanted to be a champion, because that ultimately legitimized his status as an elite player in this game. And Durant did the same thing. I know a lot of people will look at it from a semantical standpoint and say, well, LeBron didn't go to a team that, you know, won 73 games and had three all-stars, yada, yada, yada. But the difference is this: LeBron knew that those guys were going to be there. They weren't there last year. Like, they weren't there the year when he was in Cleveland. Miami was out of the playoffs, I think. Or I think they were in and he lost in the first round of Boston, something like that. But when he went to the team, he knew that Chris Bosh and Dwayne Wade were going to be there. And by him knowing that they were going to be there, it made his decision a lot easier. Same thing with Durant. When he was about to go to Golden State, he knew those guys were going to be there to help him get over the mountaintop, partly because they were there last year. But he knew they were going to be there, though. If he didn't know they were going to be there, if Curry and those guys demanded trades or they were free agents at the time, I don't think he goes to that team. He stays in Oklahoma City. So with that aspect, you know, finalized, with that aspect delivered from both sides' points, now you go to the next level. And the next level is, ultimately, what did both of these teams want to get that they weren't going to get at the teams that they were on previously? That's a championship. LeBron wasn't going to win a championship with Cleveland due to the fact that their owner and that corporation in general didn't supply him with the things he felt like he needed to provide Cleveland with that first ring in their city's history since the Browns did back in the 50s. With Durant, there were some rumblings coming out from their sources. And also from Skip Bayless, who covered the Thunder at the time, because he knew sources within that organization that Durant wanted certain pieces on the Oklahoma City Thunder to be able to achieve what he thought the team could achieve, and that was a championship ring. Sam Presti, his cheapness and his ability to free up cap space, just to free up cap space, he didn't really want to get anybody to make the team better, so that we let go Harden, let go Reggie Jackson, and, you know, now providing another ball handler that could take pressure off of Durant and Westbrook, pretty much kept the team how it was because he thought he could get by with saving money and just having two top all-stars. They fell short of the goal. So he felt like after 8 years of, you know, them not being able to get over a hump, he felt like, I can't win it there. I know Westbrook's with me. I know he's an all-star. I know he's a supreme talent, but you need more than supreme talent to win a championship. You need a collective effort by the team. They went to teams that had situations set up to where when they came in, they would have positive reinforcement for both of those guys to be able to levitate them to heights that they weren't able to get to on their previous destinations. And due to the fact, when you break it down to that context, it's same. And because at the end of the day, championships matter. And ultimately in the NBA, these cats, they play for three things. They play for the love of the game. They pay to get paid, obviously, to support their families and to support themselves. But the main entity that a lot of people, every time you talk to them, that they talk about, they want to win. And the ultimate winner is the team that holds the Larry O'Brien Trophy. Since Durant wanted to put himself in a situation where he could become the ultimate winner at the next level, I can't really fault him for doing what he did, and I ride and support with him 100%. So, obviously, people say, man, you must be a Warrior fan. No. I mean, at this point, I'm just looking at the NBA from a perspective where you want to see basketball at its competitive nature. Obviously, there's been blowouts and all that stuff, but the competition is yet to come. And the biggest competition is the finals. Two of the best teams will be there. They will be fighting it out. They will be trying to achieve the ultimate goal, and that's winning the title. And that's all that matters, because at the end of the day, when all of those guys hang up their jerseys, when a new generation, a new breed of talent moves in, and we look at back at these talents that were able to utilize them to their heights of their careers, we're going to say their stats were great. We're going to say they won a certain amount of awards when it comes to MVPs, all-stars. They got all NBAs. They got recognition from fans. They're popular in notoriety. Got the shoes, all of that. But, the thing that separates all of them, thing that separates a ton of players in this league. Well, of all those things I just listed, a select few of them are in the class of champions. And you want to be in that class. It's an exclusive class, but it's an extraordinary class, and it's a great experience for an individual to have, because when it's all said and done, you can look back in your career, and with all of that said, you can finalize within yourself that, yeah, I achieved the greatest goal, and that's winning a championship. But tomorrow, I'll be back on the air talking about the results of the Boston-Cleveland series, as well as where do the LA Clippers go. They have a pretty interesting free agency coming up, and they have a chance to possibly move forward with the pieces that they have, or they could be back at square one if Blake Griffin and Chris Paul are out of the picture. But other than that, I'll say peace out to my audience. I'll be back tomorrow.